Welcome to the fourth edition of The Smuggler's Den, a Star Wars LCG podcast. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and I'm joined today by...
Ben Tully. I go by Scarlet Knight on most of the boards that have anything relevant to do with Star Wars or games in general. We're always really happy at Smuggler's Den to take any emails from listeners, and so you can reach Tiny or myself at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com. And sometimes we will respond to you personally, and sometimes it'll just be addressed on the next episode if we have time.
All right, so this week we're going to address an issue that has been burning up the boards, and that is the issue of the Sith is overpowered. And I've noticed a lot of people talking about that. Have you noticed many people mentioning that, Ben?
I was going to ask you what boards you were looking at, because far what I've seen is people be like, I think that the dark side is too strong. And then somebody responds and goes, I totally agree, the light side is too strong. And that doesn't seem to actually make a lot of sense, but I'm wondering what boards you check out where you have seen it burning up the boards, quote unquote.
Okay, I guess I should have been more clear. Over at Board Game Geek, there is a thread that has reached, I don't know, 3 to 5 pages, somewhere in there, where there is a debate raging about whether or not the Sith is overpowered. And I would actually agree that the Sith is a bit over the curve. But the way card games work is there is always a deck that's over the curve. It would take the most impressive design ever to design decks that were always absolutely equal. I just don't see that as a reality. At the same time, I don't see the Sith as being so far over the curve that you flip over your Sith objectives and your opponent goes, oh, that's it. I lost. Whatever. Let's just play a new game.
I agree. It definitely is strong. I have been on the receiving end more times now than I can count of let me spend all my resources to put out, you know, 3 guys on the board and to have them all wiped off before I even have an opportunity to use them with a mixture of Force Choke and Darth Vader and Force Lightning, and all of a sudden I'm back to nothing and the dark side gets their double click on the Death Star dial.
Yeah, I think that's what really makes them so strong is that they're versatile in that if they can just wipe out the light side with Force Chokes and Vader, then they can come in and do some piddly damage with an Espo Trooper or some other terrible unit and just kind of whittle them down and then near the end of the game blow up a couple objectives and win. And they can also just sit there the whole game and do nothing and win in about maybe 7 turns as long as they can get Palpatine out early and just keep him always dedicated to the Force and unexhausted and just sitting there while the light side bangs their head against that wall that is the Sith.
I have felt a little bit that really what the Sith lack is an obvious weakness. I feel like a lot of the other decks have some obvious weaknesses in them, Navy and Rebel, that sometimes with the Sith just isn't as obvious. You know, you can make a Sith deck that's really strong. Even as somebody who has played Sith and knows what their tricks are, I always find myself being like, I don't know how I get around that. Sith just seem to be that strong. Where's the weakness in this? Like, how is there a drawback to ever playing a Force Choke? Ever.
Yeah. I actually see 2 weaknesses in Sith. One is luck-based, and that's they're very reliant on Vader and Palpatine. If they don't see them, they're probably going to lose. And so that's luck-based in 2 ways. One, drawing those 2 cards, and 2, getting the resources to play them. Now, Sith is able to overcome the resource problem quite easily by just packing in tons of resources, but they still have to draw them. A second drawback that I see is there are no cancels. And this, to me, is the big difference between Jedi and Sith that really gives Jedi that chance, is that they can sit there, and as long as they have some resources open, that Sith player has to think, should I play my Force Lightning on Luke now, or should I just keep holding it, waiting till all their resources are tapped for fear that I'm going to pay 3 for Force Lightning, and they're just going to go, boom, Counter-Stroke.
I mean, if you want to think of that as a weakness, that there's no cancels, in a Sith deck, and therefore that makes them weaker. I suppose that's one way of thinking it. But all of the decks, I think, currently suffer from this, what you just said before with the draw issue, where if you don't get the pieces that you're kind of expecting to get, you can run into a problem. And that's part of the game design. Yes, you can play that mind game as a Jedi, where you always leave one resource open, so therefore that's always in the back of their mind that, you know, maybe you have Counterstroke, or maybe that you have Jedi Mind Trick, or something that only costs one to play. But on the other side, from the dark side point of view, I mean, if really the big drawback is you're not really sure when you're going to play your three-cost event that kills something right away, I still think that as in terms of weaknesses, that's not a very strong weakness.
Yeah, no, I actually agree. I was just throwing that out there as one issue that they do have. Related back to the first issue with the drawing the characters is if they're only packing two whoppers in Vader and Palpatine, and the deck is really based on them, and another deck, say the Jedi, can run Obi-Wan, Han, Red 5, Luke, that's eight whoppers that they can draw into where the Sith can only draw into four. So I'm not saying that the Sith are weaker than because of this. I'm just saying it's a chink in the armor that you might be able to penetrate.
Sure.
So I wanted to talk real quick about this overpowering of the Sith in my own experience. So I have, and Ben has, what I had deemed the, quote, unbeatable Sith deck. And obviously that doesn't mean it's unbeatable, but it was a really strong deck, and it actually went 0-2 last night, and I was really kind of surprised.
And what did you feel were the major drawbacks?
In one of the games, the big problem was that I didn't see Vader the whole game. And I mean the whole game, and after the game, we joked around, and I counted my cards, and I said, okay, I only have 15 cards left. I wonder where Vader is. Flip, 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 flip. Oh, he's the third and fourth one from the bottom, and I had put two under with my objectives. So he was literally the bottom and second to bottom card after I shuffled up and drew my hand. And that is a real weak point for the Sith. And I still almost won that game. It was ever so close, but I just couldn't pull it out.
Yeah, I've had games like that. But I think in that game, you had Palpatine out, right? You didn't have Vader, but you had Palpatine.
I did, but I got him out pretty late. It was mostly smoke and mirrors and force choking the right guy at the right time and chump blocking and chump attacking with my terrible units and just trying to hold him off and until I could get my pieces. I mean, the game went a long time. It probably went 10 turns. I think I was only getting 1 point on the dial every single turn and just slowly grinding it out.
Yeah, because we had had a game last night where I used my Sith deck where I didn't see Palpatine or Vader at all. And I think in that situation, you just rolled me. Like, I don't think there was any competition. I forget what the dial was at. It might have been at 7 or 8, but it really didn't represent at all, you know. And in that game, we both had a little trouble getting any of the big characters, and you just happened to get yours first. I definitely felt like in that game, even though I was drawing into Force Lightning and I was drawing into Force Chokes, I was still having a problem where even when I was playing them, you just had just enough to keep everything on the board. I think you had a couple protectors, so I spent a lot of effort to get rid of your protectors, and every time I got rid of one, you did get another one. So, and speaking of that, I think your second game wasn't the light side player using the limited one per objective deck, the Ewok objective?
Yes, he was, and I was very, very surprised. He didn't flip that one out. He just, you know, at some point in an edge battle, I saw Yub Yub. And I thought, what the heck is going on? Wow, I'm going to just roll this so hard. And I didn't. I was doing really well. I even got Vader out. I left Vader back to protect. He had gotten a little bit of a lead because I didn't see Vader. But that's okay. That happens sometimes with the Sith. They knock out an objective. Maybe they even get two. Then you get Vader out. Then you get Palpatine out. And then you roll from there. Well, I got my Vader out and I was real happy. All of a sudden, he drops an Ewok. And I'm like, oh, Ewoks. I don't remember what they do. I read him. Oh, he gets to make one guy unable to block, and all I have left is Vader and a Chud. So he attacks with Luke and his Ewok, kills the Chud, knocks my objective down to, say, one, and then I'm really on my heels. And I still almost pulled that one out as well, but that was just too far to come back from, only having, you know, one left on an objective when the dial's only at maybe six. And I wasn't able to win that one either.
And like I've said a couple times, I really think that the light side would be doing much better overall if the light side players could play with two of the tribal support objectives, which you can't because they're limited one per objective deck. And they had some way of pretty much ensuring every time they had a Yub Yub in hand, there'd be an Ewok to play it on, because, man, taking out the Sith resources using Yub Yub to discard an enhancement from play is just amazing. And I wish there was that opportunity to use it more often.
Yeah, that really is the key to beating Sith. If you can hold their resources down to under five, they can't play Vader. And so if every time they put a Sith library down, you could just go, Yub Yub. Sith would be in huge trouble. And that may be why they did that. In playtesting, there might have been a situation where it was just too strong to be able to do that.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, the rest of that pot is pretty cool, too. I really like Log Trap as a card. I wish it was a limited one per objective deck.
I think we're going to have to agree on that one.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have just said that Sith is beatable. But to be able to beat it reliably, you need to have a deck that is well-constructed to actually beat it. You can't just rely on Vader being the bottom two cards of their deck every time. I would say my Sith deck is maybe 15-2 now. So it's a strong deck. So the rest of this episode is actually going to be a deck-building episode. And both Ben and I have decided that the Jedi look to be the strongest contender to beat the Sith. And why do you think Jedi are best suited to beat the Sith?
I think the better response here is why I don't think the Rebels are the best to tackle the Sith. And I think a lot of that comes down to the Rebel ships, while not being directly targetable by Force Choke, are still targetable by Vader's damage. So if Vader is dropped at some point and, you know, your opponent, even if you have all the vehicles on your table, I've seen a couple people do this, you a couple times, you have Force Choked one of your own characters to be able to play that event so that you could trigger Vader's reaction and take out something like a Y-Wing or an A-Wing or air, you know, an X-Wing that has a damage on it. And, you know, every time that happens, I'm like, oh, you know, I can't even keep these like little cards on the board, even though that, you know, the whole point of that deck is to kind of flood the board with, you know, things that have objective damage. And on the flip side, the number of characters that are actually in those decks is fairly limited. And, you know, without the Jedi Protector Pod, which we'll talk about there, that's important in a minute, you know, they kind of just as quickly leave the board as any of the vehicle units that are in play too. So overall, I think it has to do with there's nothing that can use to protect any of the units that you put into play. And at the same time, overall, the damage capacity of the units in the Rebel are also fairly low and susceptible to a lot of the direct damage of the Sith.
Yeah, to me, it's definitely about efficiency. A lot of those ships are not just one damage. That would be fine if they were zero cost or one cost. A lot of them are two cost to only have one damage capacity. And that just doesn't go well against the Sith. I mean, that's not to say Rebel can't win. I mean, if Rebel gets out both of their shielding pods and they get Leia out and they get all the combos with Leia and then they get Ackbar and they can do all their tricks and then they get their Rebel assaults to finish you off, yes, the Rebels can win. The problem is all these combos are difficult to get consistently. You might get a Leia, but you don't get your "You're My Only Hope," and then Leia gets Force Choked the second she hits the table, and yeah, you get to pull off a couple of your resources, but then you don't have anything valuable to use those resources on. It's all about, in my opinion at least, for the Rebels, getting those combo cards and pulling all that off. And if you can do that, you're very well likely going to win, but it's really difficult to do.
I mean, the other side of it is that they can also hit really hard, right? If you had, you know, just a couple, and by turn two, if you had a couple of the limited resources out on play and maybe something like R2-D2, and you could get out maybe up to, and you know, two Y-Wings an X-Wing, the Wookiee Navigator, you could probably, in theory, take out all of the objectives that you need to take out to win the game in turn two or three. And so in that situation, again, you would be still more, it's still of a hope. You know, it's like one of those, I hope I get all the pieces of the combo. I hope I get the right units to then take out the objectives quickly before the Sith can establish some type of board dominance.
Yeah, and closely tied to that is the idea that they don't have that many tactics icons. The Sith have tons of tactics icons. You have the Emperor. You have those Sith advisor guys that are both resources and tactics. Those cards might be, you know, some of the top cards in the game, being able to do both.
Right.
Okay, so we're in agreement that if you are in a meta where people have figured out that the Sith are awesome and you're just banging your head against the wall and complaining on the boards, and even worse, thinking, I might quit this game because it's so imbalanced, stop, take a breath, and let's make a good Jedi deck together.
Let's do it.
Okay, so it seems to me that we have four options for a Jedi deck.
Sure.
You have the all-big-guy build, which would be, what do you think, Ben?
Well, I think the big guys, in your case, are pretty much the recognizable name characters. And so you're talking Luke, Han, Obi-Wan, and Yoda.
Yeah, or you could sub out Han for Red 5,
or Red 5.
On which direction you want to go. So the next deck that I think is viable would be a control deck. And that would be, you'd use four Jedi mind tricks.
And the various counters that you have there. So you'd have C-3PO and the counter strokes.
And I think you'd want to put Pod 7 in there just so you can use that objective to grab the Force easier. When you have a control deck, the idea is if you can hold that Force, every time they put down a character, you can Jedi Mind Trick them, which double focuses them. Then you can play your It Binds All Things, get it back, and another card, double focus another guy. If you can actually get that going, and I've seen people do this, it's absolutely devastating, and Palpatine and Vader just sit there the whole game and go, you've got to be kidding me. How did he pull this off?
And the third deck type I think we've been discussing quite a bit is what we've kind of termed the resilience type of deck type. And so that would use last-minute rescue Pod 6 to be able to get your characters back or keep them from leaving the board really quick. So you get to use your Redemption, Return of the Jedi, and Force Rejuvenation, and kind of just... You know, the characters that you get out there, instead of once they remove a play, you have to wait for the next draw, version of them to come up. You can either save them immediately from your hand using Redemption or bring them back using Return of the Jedi.
And Last Minute Rescue is also amazing. If they damage you, you can say, okay, as soon as I refresh, I get to pull that damage off. And what's really tricky is they'll do something like, okay, Luke has 3 damage available. I'll damage him for exactly 3 and kill him. And you go, whoop, Jedi deflection, kill one of their guys, then your turn comes around, maybe you have 2 last minute rescues out, and you pull both of the damage off of Luke, and then you laugh.
Maniacally.
People hate that. Okay, and the last deck type that I've seen is pretty similar to the first one, and I'm calling that direct damage. And in that deck type, you're going to want to do things like Luke and Han to get targeted strikes, or Luke and the Rebel Pods with Rebel Assault. Basically, as much direct damage as you can put on people, that way you have the best shot at actually taking out Vader or Palpatine. Because remember, Palpatine only has 3 damage capacity. That is Jedi Deflection, Rebel Assault, boom, 6 cost Palpatine, gone. One of the problems, though, that a Jedi deck faces, and really a Rebel as well, is that they tend to have less damage capacity than their dark side counterparts. So Vader has 4. That's more than Luke. That's more than Obi-Wan. That's 2 more than Yoda. Yoda only has 2. He comes out, if Vader's out, Force choke, boom, Yoda is dead. So what is the one pod that we have both decided that you must include in a Jedi deck? To me, it's more important even than Pod 1 in Luke. This is the pod I go, oh, I'm running a Jedi deck. Boom, this pod is in.
And so the pod that you're talking about is pod number 5, which is the Secret of Yavin 4 pod. And in that pod, you have 2 Guardians of Peace. And so these are characters that have 2 health capacity and have the keyword shielding and the keyword protect character. So what we've been using them to do is essentially put them into battle, get a shield on them, and then anytime damage is done to one of the characters that we actually want to be on the board, we shunt the damage onto the Guardians of Peace and let them kind of take the brunt of the damage. It also has, as you mentioned before, lightsaber deflection, which is good at blocking damage, and then C-3PO, which is a good thing when you want to cancel your opponent's Sith events. You know, I really like it out there. It's a huge deterrent for people playing Force Lightning, because you don't need to focus anything. You can just discard, sacrifice C-3PO and stop the Force Lightning, and that's three resources used up from the Sith player.
Yep, and I'm going to let you in on one of my favorite tricks with the Guardian of Peace, and that is, if you're running Han's pod and you have questionable contacts out, you can do this. So you go into a battle with your Guardian of Peace. She gets a shield. They do a damage to the Guardian of Peace. You do not use your shield. I know that sounds crazy. You let the damage through. Then she still can take another one because she has a shield before she dies. Your turn rolls around. You refresh. You pull the damage off. You use questionable contacts. And you take out one of their one damage weenie location guys. And boom, you just turn the game around big time.
It's amazing how much can hinge on a one cost, one health resource guy.
Yeah, those guys are so critical for Sith. If you can take them out, you have a really good chance. And that's why I love Jedi Deflection so much. It's one of those, oh my god, you've got to be kidding me cards. You know, they force choke you, thinking they're going to kill your guy. You turn around and you kill their ultra important resource. And they just look at you going, oh my goodness, I can't believe that just happened. Okay, so the other auto includes for building a Jedi deck, in my opinion, are pods 1 and pods 2. Now, pod 1 is obvious. That's Luke's pod. So we're not even going to discuss that. Luke is a wrecking ball. If you're not using Luke and you're running Jedi, you need to run Luke. It's as simple as that. Now, pod 2 is Yoda's pod. I had originally taken this out. What about you, Ben? Were you playing this?
I have been playing the Yoda pod pretty much the whole time. Yoda is really fragile as a character. The rest of the pod is questionable, but as from something that I realized really early is that Jedi are kind of starved when it comes for resources. And Yoda is one of the only other Jedi pods that has resources generating locations in there. Luke has it and Yoda has it. And really, except for R2-D2 and the Red 5 pod, that's it. That's the only resource generating pods that you have in Jedi.
Yeah, that was the big realization I came to as well. I built the Sith deck. I counted it up, 10 resources. Oh, yeah, Palpatine and Vader can come out. I start playing my Jedi deck, and I'm thinking, why the heck can't I ever get resources? I count it up. I only have 4. So I say, okay, I'm going to go through. I'm just going to pack this sucker full of resources, just like I did with my Sith deck. And then I realized that's not even an option for the light side. I couldn't believe it. You are basically forced to run Yoda or just rely on blind luck and hope that you draw into your resources.
Yeah, and so like I said, so it doesn't give you a lot of options for what other types of pods you can run for the resources. Yes, you can run some of the Rebel pods, but the Rebel pod resources aren't as efficient as the Imperial ones. You know, the other day I brought up the fact that, oh, well, the Rebels have Mon Mothma. But the big difference between Mon Mothma and Mahdi is Mahdi has a reaction that allows him to pull the second focus token off of him if he wants to, right? So you can use both his resources each turn and always have it refreshed completely. While when Mon Mothma, if you focus her twice to use her resources, she stays out of contention for another whole round before we can get back to that.
Yep. And also, Mahdi has another resource chud in his pod. So you're getting Mahdi and another resources, whereas the Rebels, it's just one resource, and it's not someone you can double focus easily.
Right.
Yeah, so that was another surprise that I had. I combed through all those Rebel pods thinking there must be a counterpart to Mahdi. And that's why I think Sith are a little bit over the curve. It's not the power of the cards. I think both Jedi and Sith have really strong decks. I think it's the resources. And so what it comes down to is more consistently the Sith is able to get out enough resources to play not only the big guy. That's not the key. Your goal isn't just first turn Luke. Yeah, I got Luke out. Luke is going to die if you do that. What you have to do is have enough resources to play Luke and some chuds, Luke and have resources back to play Jedi mind tricks, to play counter strokes, and the dark side is just more easily able to do that.
And so, like I was saying, so there's, I think there are only really two pods that work well in a Jedi deck that make sense to, you know, not just because they're good pods, but because of their resources. And so what were those two pods that, you know, we've been discussing and talking about?
So we have pod one has resources, pod two has resources, and now you make your decision. You either go with Han's pod, which has an enhancement resource, so you'd be up to six, or you go with red five, which has R2-D2, who's amazing, zero cost, so he would come out for free, and that would bring you to six. But if you notice, red five is in pod four, which is Jedi affiliation only, so you cannot run both. You have to make that choice. So your choice is Han, red five, or rebel pods, and as we talked about, the rebel pods don't do that great anyway with resources, so I think your choice is really you're running Han's pod or red five's pod.
Fortunately, the big guy's pod, both Han and Red Five kind of cover that big guy territory. And so, you know, it really kind of dictates the way your deck might go, but at least they both have units in there that have some oomph to them that allow you to keep playing that kind of big guy strategy.
Yeah, by having those Guardians out, and then if you run Han's pod with questionable contacts, it just makes it easier to throw Han out there. They can't just go, Force Choke, Vader response, Han's dead, because you just kind of laugh and go, okay, I'll just stick it on the Jedi Guardian. Oh, well, now Han wrecks you.
That's true.
So it looks like we're in agreement that when you build a Jedi deck, your starting point is Pod 1 Luke, Pod 2 Yoda, Pod 5 the Guardians, either Han or Red 5, which basically leaves you only one more pod. And
right.
This is where you have that choice of which direction you want to go. You can go big guys with Pod 3 and Obi-Wan. You can go control with Pod 7 and the Jedi mind tricks and grabbing the Force, or you can go Pod 6 with the resilience. Which direction have you been going lately, Ben?
I've been using a version of the big guy deck where, you know, so I include Obi-Wan in there. And my choice of that, you know, Ren 5 or Han objective has been Han for right now. Mainly because I like Han's direct damage, like we discussed last week. He's got that little kind of a bit of a trick to him whenever he starts as an attacker or defender.
I gotta say, the defender part is totally crazy, and people forget that. Like, the attacker makes sense, because it's part of targeted strike. But I've had a number of times where people attack me, and I go, I'll defend with Han and kill the guy you're attacking with. And they just kind of go, what?
It is a nice little extra, him shooting first every time, pew, pew.
And he's amazing for taking out those resource weenies. They attack you, and you go, oh, okay, I'll just take out that weenie that you had unfocused because you were planning to force lightning me. Womp, womp.
And the reason I've been running this deck over some of the other ones, over the Jedi mind tricks and controlling the Force and, you know, the resilience deck that we were talking about, the reason I've been more comfortable with this one is I feel like both of those other deck types rely on multiple cards being in play that give you some type of longer term advantage, right? You need to have redemption in play and a character for redemption to be any good. You need to have the ancient monuments in play and the objective, you know, in some combination to make it that much easier to control the Force. And in the big guy pods, yes, they're kind of weak, some of them, and you might need the protectors into play, but really what they can all be played in a vacuum. I can play Obi-Wan in a vacuum and play him, and he will wreck face just as well as if I play Yoda and Luke. And yes, they're all, you know, they're all characters. They're all susceptible to the counters that Sith has for characters. But, you know, being able to do that and not rely on having those other parts has made it easier for me to play and makes it, I think, a little bit more consistent.
Yeah, so what you're really getting at there is redundancy. And this is a term that's important in these type of card games where you want a deck where there's enough things that do the same thing. So if you're relying on something, for instance, you're relying on big characters to go in and win, you want to have enough big characters so that you're drawing cards and you're drawing a big character. Maybe it's a Han or maybe it's a Luke. And in many ways, they're interchangeable. They're just big characters and that's their role. And the same thing could be true for cancels. So that's why you're running two Counter-Strokes, two C-3POs. Against the Sith deck, you want to have counters. And frankly, you don't really care what form they're in. You just want the counters. So by having a redundancy and having four of them built into your deck, there's just a better chance of getting that particular option.
And it's interesting how this works out in the deck building environment of the Star Wars, right? Because, you know, we had this discussion, you know, just last night, where the big difference right now between Star Wars and maybe some of the other LCGs, you know, we both, you know, as we said before, we both play Game of Thrones, is that when you build a Game of Thrones deck and you can just customly design which of the 60 cards go in there and what your deck makeup is, you know, there are times where every card in your hand is useful, right? And every card in your deck, and think of a couple times where your opponent has some effect that allows them to look at your hand and they have to pick a card to discard. And they look at your hand, they're like, all six of these cards are amazing. Unlike that in Star Wars, the pods are designed to be somewhat homogenous in terms of strength. And so, yes, there are some strong pods, yes, there are some weak pods, but you end up having a hand, sometimes even, you know, a series of hands, where all you're drawing into is those deck cards that make the pods slightly more balanced. And they're not the cards that you want to see. You know, it happened to be yesterday where I got through at least half my deck where I didn't see an Obi-Wan, a Luke, a Yoda, or a Han. And without them, and just being only being able to play weenie after weenie after weenie, I was really hurting by the time the Death Star was at 7 or 8. And I had never seen, you know, hadn't had anybody who could do significant amounts of damage to the board.
Yeah, that's where the new packs are going to be really helpful. You still won't be able to have all the characters in the deck be good or have 100 cancels in your deck. But you will be able to have even more redundancy. You know, you can take that last pod and say, I really want to make this a cancel deck. I'm going to have 8 cancels in this deck instead of only the maximum you can have 4. Or I'm going to make this an all big guy deck, and then you can have up to, say, 5 pods and have each of them with a big guy and have 10 big guys. So that will be nice. But yeah, definitely for right now, it's really about getting as much redundancy as you can. And like you said, there is that inherent limitation that we're trying to overcome. So I too am playing the big guy deck right now, but I've actually played both the control and the resiliency deck. And I didn't like the resiliency deck very much because in order to make redemption work, you have to use an entire turn to put him out and you have to have that fifth resource. The beauty of the Jedi is that Luke only costs 4, Yoda only costs 3, Han only costs 4, so you're able to get them out if you don't get that extra resource. And so if you commit to playing the resilience deck, you are really hoping that you get one of your 6 resources. And if you get it, great, you're in business. If you don't, you sit there with the redemption, the whole reason you put that pod in there going, well, I guess this is an edge card because I'm just not drawing another resource.
And so I also have played a control deck and had an opportunity with it. And the reason I shied away from it is because, yes, the pod, so the Jedi training pod number 7, comes with the things that makes it slightly more control. It gives you the extra copies of Jedi Mind Trick and Bind All Things, right? The characters in there are fairly weak. You already have a couple of copies of those through the other pods. And so now you're upping it to 4 copies of both Jedi and Hiding Believer in the old ways. And in doing so, I always felt like every time I drew, you know, my 2nd or 3rd or 4th copy of any one of those cards, I was like, ugh, I just wish I had somebody who could do something, a little bit more damage, a little bit more threat, not just place on the board and get force choked.
Yeah, I mean, Jedi in Hiding, 2 cost and 1 damage capacity is basically saying, hi, I'm the most inefficient card you could ever play against a Sith deck. I've actually seen one person play this deck pretty well. A friend of mine, Agnos, he's playing a control deck. And it's one of those things where when it works, it's great. I mean, he can lock down Palpatine for half the game. But when he doesn't get his Jedi mind tricks really early, or I get a bunch of resources early, it just slides away really fast. Because in order to play the Jedi mind tricks, you have to play Obi-Wan's pod, and you have to play that pod 7, and that limits you in what resources you can play and what other pods you can play. You're either not playing 6 resources, or you're not playing the Jedi Guardians at that point. And really, both of those options are kind of insane. As we said, those are the 3 absolute must-auto-includes that you have to use. And so you're limiting yourself in trying to play that. But it can be really effective.
As we've seen, you know, and talked about a couple times now, it really just kind of sometimes comes with the draw. And so, you know, I think what we both, you and I, have been trying to do is maximize the number of times we don't have to rely on the draw. And so if both of the other decks that aren't the big guy decks rely and, you know, maybe they work 2 out of 5 times against the Sith, even if the big guy pod just works 2.5 times out of 5 against the Sith, that little extra bit that makes it slightly more powerful in terms of facing the Sith, you know, is enough for both you and I to be like, I think this is the deck that we're going to be playing for a little while.
Right. It's that what gives you the best chance to beat the Sith. That's really what you're going for.
That's what I'm going for. And I think we both settled on the rounded out big guy pods. So let me ask you this, right? So now that we've discussed it, you know, we've discussed a strong light side deck through the Rebel affiliation, and we've listed a couple of the different versions that you could play with that. And, you know, we seem to have settled on a big guy version. You know, maybe both of us are using Han, but you could easily use Red 5. How would you play this deck against a dark side player?
Well, there's a number of things to keep in mind. I think the first one is don't throw out the big guys without getting out your Jedi Guardian first, unless it's a really specific scenario. I've had situations where, for some crazy reason, the dark side struggles a lot the first turn, and maybe they make a big mistake and play a guy who costs 3 and then attack with him for some reason, and I have a Luke in my hand, and I know I can just drop Luke, kill that guy he put out, and put a massive hurt on an objective. But when I do that, I'm thinking to myself, Luke is probably going to die, but it's a decision I'm making knowing that he's going to die. Don't just drop Yoda and then complain when he dies right away. You have to be prepared to be able to soak stuff up. So a great early hand is something like 2 Jedi Guardians, a resource, a C-3PO, and then whatever 2 cards. That's a dream hand. Yeah, you don't have any big guys. That's okay. You can draw into them. You're setting up your foundation before you throw out the big guys.
One of the big things you want to do as a Jedi is to keep your opponent second-guessing what you might have in your hand. You have a lot of good in-hand cancels, you know, in the form of lightsaber deflection and in the form of Jedi Mind Trick and Counterstroke. But especially for Jedi Mind Trick and Counterstroke, you have to have the resources open for them. And so unless the turn really requires you to, you know, spend all of your resources, it's probably a good idea to find some way of keeping one of your Jedi affiliation-centric resources open. And always, even if you don't have them in your hand, make it so that your opponent doesn't want to play that 3-cost Force Lightning because you have 1 card in your hand and 1 resource open, and it could be that one Counterstroke that's going to make it so that their attempt to kill your focus character is a complete loss.
Yeah, one of the big mistakes I've seen beginner players make against the Sith deck is something like, I drop a character in my deploy phase, I drop another one, I drop another one, and then they just randomly go, I'll Jedi Mind Trick that one. And I'm kind of looking at them like, okay. I mean, that's not really gaining you anything. You just used your last resource. Now I know you just can't do anything. You're just sitting there, and I can do whatever I want. You really want to make that Sith player think about the different options you have in your hand.
And it's really great with Jedi Mind Trick because you can wait until they commit only one character to attack in Jedi Mind Trick, or you can wait till they only commit one character to defend in Jedi Mind Trick. And so it's really good to have use it in the situation where they've really tried to control the board for their favor, and then all of a sudden you can come in and stop them. I personally really like doing it after, you know, it's not always my favorite because I like to win the edge battle normally when I'm attacking. But if I am attacking and they only have one defender and they put in all of their cards and the edge battle, and they win the edge battle, and then I mind trick the guy. I mean, that's like one of my favorite things to do. Yes, you've won the edge battle. Maybe I don't get my edge icons, and that kind of hurts me. But maybe you've gone through your whole hand, and that gives me a second attack that will make it so that I can do damage to some objectives at that point.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the big problem people have is they see Vader on the board, and they go, oh, I got to mind trick him. He's too good. I won't be able to attack. And they forget that exactly what you said. You just wait until after the edge battle. Then, boom, Vader's done, then you can run roughshod with all the other guys. That's a great trick to be able to pull off. Another one is Swindled. So if you're playing smugglers and spies, and you can leave two open, and you can leave a Jedi and a smuggler's location open, let's say it's later in the game, and you have a bunch of extra resources, and you have like a Twi'lek advisor in your hand, they're like, should I drop him to be my ninth character, or leave these two open? Leave them open. The more different kind of resources, the more your opponent has to think, oh man, he could swindle my protector guy. If he does that, then Palpatine's vulnerable. So all their decisions get warped just by the fact that you might have cards. And let's say you don't have any of those cards. It doesn't matter. Their decisions are still warped by the fact that you might have them.
I just wanted a second to go back and talk about even more tricksy things that you can do with the Jedi mind trick. And this is something that I toyed with last night, and I think can really work pretty well if you have a protector set up and you don't mind it being the card that's going to be lost. But I notice a lot of times that people, because Vader has so many Force icons, they commit him to the Force and then still use him either in defense or attack, you know, just because on the turns that he isn't required, he's a great way of keeping the Force dark side. You know, I was tempted last night to let Vader strike while committed to the Force so that he would get two focus icons and then play Jedi Mind Trick on him to give him four total focus icons because the Force was with me. And I didn't because I didn't have a protector, and it probably would have meant a Yoda, and I just used it right away. But it's another way that, you know, you can, you know, your opponent can be like, yes, I got it through. You know, Vader just did all this awesome damage. I'm doing great. And then you play your mind trick, and he's out for two turns.
Yeah, I really love to do that with the Twi'lek Advisor. I'll chump attack an objective I don't actually care about attacking this turn just to make them decide if they only have Vader left. What do I do? If I don't defend, he's going to be tacticsed, and then the rest of their guys come through. So I might as well defend, and then at least I can kill the Twi'lek. Then I purposely let them win the edge. They kill the Twi'lek, double focus, then you Jedi Mind Trick them, quadruple focus. I think that is a great trick that you can pull off on the Sith. And they will cry when Vader gets quadruple focus.
Yes.
Another thing to bear in mind is Yoda. And Yoda is, let's be honest, a terrible offensive weapon. A lot of people get all crazy with Yoda and think, oh, what I want to do with Yoda is load him up with enhancements so he gets all these icons and then attack with him. Do not attack with Yoda unless it's just going to be unopposed. He only has 2 health, and he has to win the edge battle. All those icons he's gaining are white icons. It puts a lot of pressure on you because Sith will often have their draw objective out. They play tons of Twist of Fates. There's a really good chance that if they're just sitting back and defending, they're going to have a full hand of cards. You're not going to win the edge battle. So then Yoda storms in there. He has barely any icons, and then he dies. Just commit him to the Force and put tons of pressure on the Sith player to actually try to take that Force back. Because if they can't and you get 12 turns to win, you're going to win.
That's true. I mean, that seems to be one of the more viable strategies, you know, for the Jedi, you know, and for the light side in general that I've seen, is that, you know, we talked already about if you can hit their resources so they can't get out Vader or Palpatine, that's great. But it definitely seems if you can keep the Force and make it go 12 turns, it's going to be really, really hard for the dark side to win that game, especially because you're doing, you know, 12 damage to objectives just using the Force, you know. And maybe you're not. Maybe it's going back and forth, so it's always the opposing person's Force when it's their turn. But just keeping it so that the Death Star dial isn't going up 2 each turn, it can be really amazing and valuable in terms of making sure the game keeps going.
Yeah, the Sith player will sometimes be willing to attack, but they don't want to be forced into that situation. They don't want it to get down to a race between a Jedi deck getting their 3 and the Sith having to knock out enough to bump up that dial. They really want that luxury of just sitting back and letting it creep up pretty darn fast and putting a lot of pressure on the Jedi. By committing Yoda, you just flip that script and put all the pressure on the Sith player. The last thing, and we've talked about this a bit already, is that you have to minimize their resources. So here's some tricks you can do. If they drop the advisor first turn, who has a tactics icon and a resource, one thing I really like to do, and this is a bit tricky, is just drop a Jedi Mind Trick on that guy immediately. So he's double focused because first turn you have the Force. Yes, you're not going to be able to refresh that, and you're only going to have three. But as we already talked about, your goal is not to drop Luke first turn. It's to drop a resource, C-3PO, a Guardian, things like that that are cheaper, and it gives you more options to do that. If you can lock down those resources and just slow them down all the more so they can't take the Force with that advisor, next turn they don't have five like they were planning on to play Vader. They still only have four because he's double focused. And then maybe in the meantime you do a deflection and somehow kill him, or you get Han out that next turn before he becomes unfocused, attack and kill him with Han. It's just a way to always try to keep those resources down. That's really your number one job as a Jedi player. Don't let them get to five. If they get to five, that's when you start going, uh-oh, I really better speed this game up, because when they draw that Vader, things are going to get bad.
So we've talked a little bit of what happens when you're playing a Sith deck. What happens when you come up against somebody who's decided they're going to try a Navy deck? I mean, because it's all great if we design a Jedi deck that is really great against the Sith deck, but there's no guarantee just because we think that the Sith deck is the strongest deck that when we sit down at an upcoming tournament that somebody hasn't come up or is willing to play a Navy deck and, you know, either all Navy or has a couple of different Navy pods in their Sith deck so that you have, you know, this mix of stuff. You know, what do you have? Do we have some ideas of what we could do to keep the Jedi deck still strong in that situation?
Yeah, and this deck has actually been tweaked from my original build to do this. That's one of the reasons why I went away from the control build, is because four Jedi Mind Tricks against a Navy deck is like having four dead cards in your hand. It's right. Really frustrating.
Because it can only target characters.
Yeah, exactly. So they put down a whole bunch of Black Squadron guys. They get that Black Squadron objective out, and they're unfocusing their guys. They're tailing rolling, unfocusing them, and you're holding your Jedi Mind Trick going, man, I hope they play that super laser engineer guy so I can actually mind trick somebody.
Right.
Okay, so some of the ways that I deal with a Navy deck is to try to be aware of the big cards that they have. I mean, if they just put out some TIE fighter and try to attack with him, I'm really not that worried because the targeted strikes take care of them. The Guardians soak up a lot of damage. Questionable Contacts helps you soak up even more damage and then turn around and kill people. The big problem to me is stopping things like the super laser or detain, the big game-changing moments. And so I like to always have my C-3PO on the board or a Counter-Strike. It's just, I mean, when I play Navy, and I'm relieved. I think, oh, thank goodness I don't have to deal with four Force Chokes and Vader. All I have to deal with are some ships buzzing around my ear.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is that the big kind of game changers in a Navy deck are still these events that you want to have the cancels out for, right? So it's not changing the gameplay in terms of like what you're thinking in terms of strategy, right? You're still thinking, I need to get a 3PO out, I need to get a Counter-Strike out, I need to get my Guardians out so that when they play the TIE Fighter Attack Squadron that they're not doing direct damage, targeted strike to characters that I want to keep on the table. You know, it sounds like you're still, it's a general, the strategy doesn't change that much.
The strategy changes in one way, and that I'm not as concerned about the resources. There's only one huge guy usually in a Navy deck, and that's the Devastator. And the Devastator is really great, but he's more easily contained by the deck that we have. If you have a lot of targeted strike, they have a really hard time actually committing attacks with him, because if they leave themselves open and you draw into a Han, you just go boom, attack with Han, one damage for the attack, two more damage for his strike, that's three of the five. Let's say you have a deflection, boom, he's down to four. Han defends, boom, that's five.
Right,
he's somewhat easily contained by targeted strike.
It's still a lot of damage to get to, but yes, you can, you know, the Devastator is just, that's the thing, right? Is it can't be protected by Palpatine's guards. It doesn't, Navy doesn't have a lot of way of removing damage from their vehicle units. So as soon as you hit five damage on it, they have to spend six resources getting another one out.
Yeah, the one card that's really a bit troubling is the Defense Protocol objective, which lets them reduce their hand size to do a direct damage. But I actually usually don't mind that at all, because I just go, okay, I'll absorb that with the Jedi Guardian. Next turn, Questionable Contacts, I pull it off the Jedi Guardian, and I put it on whoever I want. Because they don't have as much direct damage, I can be more careless with my Jedi Guardians and let them get damaged knowing it's going to be moved around.
That is a really strong objective. It's always the one I go after really very hard first. If I can get rid of that one, I, kind of sit back normally at that point. I'm like, okay, I can take down another couple of objectives over the next couple of turns. But it's really hard to, when you have that pressure and you don't have any protectors out there, getting that direct damage over and over again from them.
Yeah, I mean, that objective really warps your game. I've had games where I'd had maybe Yoda, and I had a game where I had Red 5 in my opening hand, and I didn't play them for about 6 turns because I just knew if I played them, they were going to die really fast. And so I was just trying to draw into that protector, and I never could draw into it. And so I just said, okay, well, here's the deal. I can't play these really low damage capacity guys. I have to be willing to adapt my game to that objective, go kill it, then play those guys. Another objective that you really should be thinking about is the Sith Black Squadron objective. First of all, if you see them playing this, you know what's coming. This is going to be a fighter deck. You're going to see Talon rolls. You're going to see things like Attack from the Sky. Basically, they're going to be playing events to pull force counters off of their fighters and just rip you apart. So take out that Black Squadron objective right away and be ready with your counters to counter their focus removal, because they will be counting on that. And if you prevent that, that allows you to say something like, okay, unopposed to their guy who only has one blast icon and they're thinking, moo-ha-ha, I'm going to play all these events and blow up that objective. And if you just go, cancel, cancel, then they've overcommitted and they didn't blow up the objective, and then you can just come through and roll over them.
And so I think that kind of covers it. We've come up with a deck for the Jedi that we both feel and have played and feel like it has a strong chance and is fairly strong against what people have been calling the overpowered reign of the Sith that are out there. It handles the Navy decks kind of well. Can be caught off guard if your opponent's doing a lot of direct damage. I mean, I had a game yesterday that was the big guy deck versus a Navy deck with fighters, and they took out 3 objectives. And as I've said before, it didn't win them the game because they still needed to take out that 4th one to get the Death Star dial to click up. So hopefully this will help people, maybe people who are having trouble. And we'd be happy to hear everybody's feedback on it. Make sure you shoot us an email at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com. We'd be happy to have everybody's input, especially if there are people out there who are having a lot of success with Alliance. We'd like to hear how you've been doing it and how you've been holding up against the Sith.
And just to be clear, the deck that we are playing is pods 1, 2, 3, 5, and 15. Let us know what you think. Okay, so last week I got to quiz Ben, and so I guess it's time for my comeuppance. So bring it on, Ben. Give me a pod quiz.
I'm gonna quiz you. So, Tiny, your quiz this week for episode number 4 is going to be pod number. Ready? You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Pod number 3.
Pod number 3. Pod number 3 is Obi-Wan's pod.
Sure.
I cannot remember the name of the objective, but I know it's the one where you draw if you play a Force user.
That's correct. The name of the objective is Forgotten Heroes.
Okay, so it has Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. It has the amazing card Jedi Mind Trick.
Sure.
I know it does not have a resource. I believe it has that terrible Jedi card. I think it's Jedi in Hiding.
That's correct. You're at 3 of 5. Any other guesses?
Does it have a Twist of Fate?
Does not have a Twist of Fate. It does have a Fate card, though.
A Heat of Battle.
It has a Heat of Battle. And the 5th card is?
Another 2-cost terrible one, the 2-2. So what is the 5th card in the pod?
The 5th card in the pod is the event Our Most Desperate Hour. Place 1 shield on a target character unit, even if that character already has a shield.
Interesting. I was thinking that card was in the Jedi Guardian pod. It is also a fabulous card that we did not talk about.
We did not talk about it.
Okay, so I did all right. Hopefully our listeners did better than I did. And I just want to tell you one thing about the numbers. I completely freaked out an opponent the other day. He played his Sith library, and I said, do you mind if I take a look at that? And I looked really closely at the bottom, and he said, whoa, are you looking at the number? And I said, yeah. He said, oh, wow. And it just rattled him a bit. So just be aware that in addition to everything else, even if you don't know the pods, just faking that you do will throw your opponent off just a little bit.
Okay, so that brings us to the very last segment of this week, which is going to be our card of the week. So my card this week is an objective card. And you, some of you are like, are we allowed to do that? Yes, we're allowed to do that because we're the hosts and we can do whatever we want. And so the objective card that I have picked that I think should be my card of the week is In You Must Go, which is Yoda's objective, so that's already kind of nice. And it has the text, reduce the cost of the first enhancement you play each turn by one. And what I really like about this is that unlike the Sith kind of counter to this, which is reduce the cost of events, and you can sometimes play a zero-cost event, which uses up your objective, what you can do for the Jedis with enhancements is you can play all your resource enhancements for free, right? None of this pay one and then use that one to pay something in the future. It comes out for free that turn. And so, you know, if you have this objective up and you get one of those cards in your first turn, that's five resources you have first turn at a minimum guaranteed without having to spend anything. And that's always my card of the week this week.
Yeah, you can do something really powerful with that. You drop your resource, you drop Jedi Guardian, you drop Yoda all turn one. That is a very strong turn one. And the light side has so many good enhancements. It has Trust Your Feelings.
Jedi Lightsaber.
Yeah, and it also has Shito Training, which actually is terrible.
Shicho Training.
Okay, we can agree to disagree and maybe agree that I don't know how to pronounce it.
That reading is only certain skills that certain people need to know.
Okay, my card of the week is Admiral Mahdi because, well, he is amazing. All right, so Admiral Mahdi is 3 cost, 2 damage capacity. He has a blast icon, which every now and then is useful. But his key is he has 2 resources. He has the reaction after you refresh, remove 1 focus token from a target unit you control. This is especially amazing because it means you can do 1 of 2 things. You can double focus him and remove both of them next turn. Or let's say your opponents try to do something tricky and you double focus Vader and they go, ha ha, I'm going to Jedi mind trick him also and put a 3rd on him. When you go to refresh, you go, elite, 2 off Vader. I'll trigger Mahdi to take that 3rd one off. I've had at least 5 games where people went, whoa, I forgot about that interaction. Oh, man. And it completely bones their game. And one other thing that it has, 3 force icons. You wouldn't believe how many times that's been valuable. Late game, where I don't need him anymore as a resource person, just commit him, and it's so much easier to hold on to the force having him sitting back there.
Who would have thought that the guy who gets choked out in one of the early scenes of New Hope would be such a monumental character in the Imperial Navy deck?
Yeah, not even the Imperial Navy deck.
But so, even in all the dark side decks.
Exactly. He's so important that I use the Navy affiliation in my Sith deck just for him.
All right, and so that's going to do it for us on our 4th episode of the Smuggler's Den Star Wars LCG podcast. Please be sure to send us any thoughts and feedbacks you might have. You know, post them to the boards where if you want to start a discussion. Send it to us quietly if you want to send hate mail and love letters or whatever you crazy people do. Make sure that you send it to smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com. And may the force be with you.